Allô, c'est Vieux Farka Touré, vous écoutez WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show from Accra. Today, we are going to hear about a group of protesters in front of Congressmember Paul Tonko's office in Albany on Earth Day, urging him to do better with his clean energy bill that allows incinerating garbage. We'll also hear from Basilica Hudson's Melissa Oftemar about the local art scene, and Julia Jorn has her Hudson Valley Word of Mouth segment, visiting Olana and speaking with Amy Hausman and Mark Przorski. Plus, the Public News Service has the national headlines, and the Catskill Maker Syndicate has the better weather on the WGXC Morning Show, which starts now after the local news. Stay tuned.
The moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Got questions about technology, cybersecurity? Whether it's a remote car starter or jellyfish, try your luck at stumping our panel on the Thingularity radio program. Just send your questions to CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com. That is CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com. And one of our many interns will be electroshocked into inducing an answer for your listening pleasure. Listen to the Thingularity radio program every first Thursday of each month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXE sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support. Thank you.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant in Freehold, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXE sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXE.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
This is WGXC's Congressional Report, tracking the votes, words, and actions of Representative Antonio Delgado, a Democrat from Rhinebeck, representing the 19th Congressional District, and Paul Tonko, a Democrat from Amsterdam, from the 20th Congressional District. The website 538.com reports that Delgado, Tonko, and Sean Maloney, all Hudson Valley Democrats, vote with President Joe Biden's positions 100% of the time so far, while Republican Elise Stefanik votes with Biden just 18.8% of the time.
Emily Munson is reporting for the Times Union New York will lose a seat in Congress and an electoral college vote based on new data released by the U.S. Census Bureau April 26. U.S. Census officials said if New York counted 89 more people and the population data for all other states remained the same, the state would not be losing a seat. Dan Lamb, lecturer at Cornell's Institute for Public Affairs, said, and I quote, "It's like voting. Every person counts," end quote. He added, and I quote, "Anytime there is a near miss like that, you start to wonder what could have been," end quote. Seven states, including New York, California, Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, will each lose one seat in Congress. Six states will gain seats. Texas will add two seats, while Colorado, Florida, Missouri, North Carolina, and Oregon will each gain a seat. Plus, states that are gaining congressional seats will also gain electoral college votes in presidential elections. It will now be up to the state's 10-member redistricting commission to decide which congressional seat New York will lose and how to redraw the map. The Census Bureau promised to deliver the full data set used for redrawing the maps to the state by the end of September. That information will pinpoint where population declines took place. It also means the final district maps that will be used for 2022 elections may not be available until the end of the year. According to the data released, New York's population grew by 4.2% from 2010 to 2020, and more people moved out of the state than moved in, census officials said. The state gained 823,147 residents from 2010 to 2020 for a total of 20,201,249 residents in 2020. In addition, 28,451 fewer federal employees living overseas claimed New York residents from 2010 to 2020. Utah saw the greatest population increase of any state, followed by Texas and North Dakota. West Virginia, Illinois, and Mississippi lost population. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Michael Guizdala reports in the Saratogian that in addressing the Rensselaer County Chamber of Commerce online April 28th, both Democrats Paul Tonko and Antonio Delgado lamented the shrinking New York congressional delegation. Quote, "We lose one voice of 27 in the delegation, and so that weakens our clout through committee assignments and through votes on the floor," unquote, Tonko said. Quote, "I have to tell you, it's so painful to acknowledge that we were within 89 people of being included in our count to have saved all 27 seats," unquote. Delgado got at the reason New York is losing a congressional seat. Quote, "All 11 counties in New York 19 over the last 10 years or so have experienced population loss," unquote, Delgado said. Quote, "So for me, the big takeaway is how do we change that? What do we do to retain families, attract families, and make sure that our community, our rural way of life in upstate New York is maintained," unquote. Both representatives mentioned rural broadband, crumbling roads and water systems, as some of the infrastructure the current New York delegation is working in Congress to improve. Quote, "There are certain counties in New York 19 where nearly 90% of the roads are in disrepair. I mean, that's just unacceptable. So I do think that's going to be a big component," unquote, said Delgado. Read more about this story in the Saratogian.
Roger Hannigan Gilson reports in the Times Union that the New York State Marine Highway Transportation Company, a private barge operator that transports rock from the Peckham Industries Quarry in Catskill to the Colarusso and Sons Quarry in the city of Hudson, wants to moor up there three 250-foot barges in the Hudson River near a Germantown park. The U.S. Coast Guard proposed a series of barge anchorages for oil ships in 2016 that was withdrawn after much public opposition. The federal government eventually passed a law prohibiting any anchorages south of Kingston. But Germantown is north of there, and this proposal is for mooring, a semi-permanent anchor for ships across from the Ernest R. Lasher Jr. Memorial Park rather than anchorage. Local officials say they were only recently notified about the proposal for up to three barges parked near Germantown while waiting for dock space across the Hudson River at the Peckham Industries Quarry and the Lehigh Cement Plant or after being loaded. Germantown Supervisor Robert Bury said, and I quote, "The other side of the river from us is industrial, so you can see barges over there. So I don't get it. Why are you going to move barges from the industrial side of the river to the recreational side?" End quote. Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chair Matt Murrell has issued a letter opposing the proposal and is asking Assemblyperson D.D. Barrett, State Senator Daphne Jordan, and Representative Antonio Delgado to also speak out against the proposed moorings. John Lipscomb, the boat captain for Riverkeeper, is a member of the Hudson River Safety, Navigation, and Operations Committee, newly created to regulate river activity, and says the moorings are nothing to worry about. Liscomb asked, and I quote, "To put it in perspective, as I travel on the patrol boat on the length of the Hudson River, there are hundreds of navigation aids, the red and green buoys. What are they?" End quote. He answered, and I quote, "They're a big anchor, a chain, and a buoy. There's never been any sort of evidence that this has a negative environmental impact," end quote. The Hudson River Safety Navigation and Operations Committee voted to back the project without hearing any comments from citizens. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Noah Zweifel reports in the Altamont Enterprise that while Representative Paul Tonko, a Democrat representing Albany County and other upstate regions, touts his massive Clean Future Act as, and I quote, "bold and urgent federal climate action," end quote, environmental activists are upset about the bill's allowances for waste incineration as a source of clean electricity. Alexis Goldsmith, the National Organizing Director of Beyond Plastics, a policy group headquartered at Bennington College in Vermont, said, and I quote, "Burning municipal waste doesn't eliminate the need for landfills. For every 3 pounds of trash burned, 1 pound of toxic ash is produced. The fly ash is emitted into the atmosphere and readily contaminates the air, soil, and water. The bottom ash contains concentrated toxins and must be landfilled in someone's community," end quote. In response, Tonko's communication director, Matt Sonborn, issued a statement bragging about Tonko's environmental record, but not addressing the issue of burning garbage. Instead, environmentalists would like to see less trash produced. Goldsmith said, and I quote, "Nearly 400 million tons of virgin plastic is produced annually, and that amount is expected to triple by 2050. 40% of new plastic is for single-use packaging. The flood of material in the waste stream is overwhelming and unmanageable. Even with good waste management practices, plastic readily contaminates the environment," end quote. And you can read the full story in the Altamont Enterprise.
On Earth Day, activists protested outside of Congressperson Paul Tonko's office in Albany, urging him to be stronger on climate issues. WOOC's Mark Dunley recorded Alexis Goldsmith of Beyond Plastics speaking.
Is burning trash going to give us clean air and clean water?
No!
Is burning trash going to save humanity from the climate crisis? Is burning trash going to prevent mass extinction?
No!
Then why does the Clean Future Act provide clean energy tax credits to burn trash? Paul Tonko. What?
Campaign contributions,
that's exactly right. We know that Covanta, which is a major trash incinerator, is lobbying hard for waste incineration in this bill. But doesn't Paul Tonko remember the Answers plant in Sheridan Hollow that gave black residents of that community multiple myeloma and cancer? Why would we burn trash? Secondly, burning trash is not the answer. It only more deeply entrenches our reliance on petrochemicals. And that's because big plastic is the same as big fracking and oil and gas. All of plastic in the United States is made from fracked gas, liquids, ethane. Plastic makes up 20% of the oil and gas market, and burning trash undermines waste reduction and recycling efforts. So why would we burn it? So we can keep making plastic. But what we really need is policy to reduce, reuse, and recycle. That would actually help the climate crisis. The big plastic loves to remind us that their products are in everything we use. But this is a political conclusion and not a scientific fact that we can't live without gas. So I'm calling on Paul Tonko to remove trash incineration from the Clean Future Act, to stand with communities who want real solutions for the climate crisis and for a clean and healthy environment.
Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org. The National Weather Service in Albany is predicting a 70% chance of showers, possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. on Sunday. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high near 66 and a low Sunday night around 51. Showers are likely again on Monday, mainly after 2 p.m., a 60% chance then, with a high of 66 and a low around 55. And Tuesday, there's again a 60% chance of rain and thunderstorms possible after 2 p.m., with cloudy skies and a high near 72 and a low around 55. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to Stars and Stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kathy E. of Seaford, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
This is a red alert. Please remain calm. Every precaution will be taken for your protection. Keep your radio tuned to this place on the dial throughout the alert period for information. Telephone service to your home may be cut off to permit military and civil defense authorities to carry out vital operations. Take shelter in your basement or in your nearest shelter area. If you can plug in your radio in the basement, take it with you. Use a portable radio set if you have one. Otherwise, turn up the volume of your radio so that you can hear it in the basement. Keep calm. Don't lose your head. This station will continue to stay on the air throughout the alert period to bring you authentic information and official instructions. Refuse to listen to unauthorized rumors or broadcasts. This is your official broadcast.
In accordance with the authority vested in me, I hereby declare a emergency to exist.
If you were only 1 inch tall, you'd ride a worm to school. The teardrop of a crying ant would be a swimming pool for you. A crumb of cake would be a feast and last you 7 days at least. A flea would be a frightening beast if you was 1 inch tall. If you were only 1 inch tall, you'd walk beneath the door, and it would take about a month to get down to the store. A bit of fluff would be your bed. You'd swing upon a spider's thread and wear a thimble on your head if you were 1 inch tall. You'd surf across the kitchen sink upon a stick of gum. You couldn't hug your mama. You'd just have to hug her thumb. You'd run from people's feet in fright. To move a pen would take all night. This poem took 14 years to write, 'cause I'm just 1 inch tall.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I am a student at Columbia Greene Community College, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Ashuda. I am 19 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Georgia. I am from Hudson.
I'm Fadian. I'm also from Hudson, and I'm 7 years old.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate, bookish things.
And that's what we're going to do today. because that's what we do every day. Well, every radio day. I guess I talk about books and bookish things most days. I am a librarian. But anyways, who would like to get us started? How about Georgia?
So I'm sharing a book that I really love called The Egypt Game. I think they actually have this in the library. It's a really popular book. It's a really nice book. So it's about these two girls who meet and they instantly click over their love of Egypt. And so they start a game called the Egypt Game. It's like a club. And then more and more children start to join. And then it goes from 2 to 6. And then they think it's a game. And then strange things start happening to the participants. So I will read the back. The first time Aleti Ross meets April Hall, she's not sure they have anything in common. But she soon discovers that they both love anything to do with the ancient Egypt. When they stumble upon a deserted storage yard behind the A to Z Antiques and Curio shop, Aleti and April decides the perfect spot for the Egypt game. Before long, there are 6 Egyptians instead of 2. After school and on weekends, they all meet to wear costumes, hold ceremonies, and work on their secret code. Everyone thinks it's just a game until strange things begin happening to the players. Has the Egypt game gone too far?
Has it gone too far, Georgia?
You will see.
I can't remember if I read that book, but I remember the title from when I was a kid. I'm pretty sure it was out when I was a kid, unless I'm confusing it with another book.
Really? Huh, no wonder it's so popular. Okay, let's see. I'm going to check the copyright.
1986. So yeah, when I was a kid, it was out. 1972. That's before I was born. Yeah, there's all these different editions.
I thought it'd be much later, like 2015 or something.
Yeah, it looks like the 70s maybe. But it's nice that it's held up over the years. I'm curious if they changed it at all. Every once in a while, they update a book to be more present day friendly. I've read a couple of those. They're somewhat amusing to see the changes.
Like, I haven't really read any of those, but
maybe you don't realize you have.
Maybe so, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah. There's a book called Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, by Judy Blume. That's very popular, long time book. I think that came out either while I was a child or before I was born. I'm not sure. But I remember it from when I was a kid. I didn't read it as a kid, but I remember seeing it at the library because the cover was really pretty. And a part of that book discusses menstruation because she's hitting puberty. And a lot of sort of the products that are available today are different from the products that were available then. And so what some of the updated versions have different feminine hygiene products, which is one way they updated it. And then there's some books by Lois Duncan that were out when I was a kid too that are sort of like YA books from probably the 80s or the 90s. And there weren't cell phones then. So that's one thing that's missing from those books that doesn't really connect well with today's youth. And so in some cases, they like have added that in so that the characters have their phones at the beginning and then they lose them or they go into a spot where their phones don't work. So it's sort of amusing to see those changes made. But did you read that book recently, Georgia, or is that like an old favorite?
I read that last summer during COVID-19.
And what do you like most about it?
Everything.
That's a good middle grade selection for elementary and middle school age readers. And who's that one by? I don't know if you said the author's name.
Her name is, so hard to read her first name on the cover. Wait, I can read that. Okay. Zilpha Keatley Snyder.
So if people want to check that out.
Hard to remember. Zilpha Keatley Snyder.
It's hard to say, huh?
Zilpha Keatley Snyder. Okay, I think I got it. Or is it Snyder? Yeah.
Snyder. Yeah, it's Snyder. Cool. Thanks for sharing. How about Amelia?
I haven't gotten a chance to read very much this past week, but I do have some stuff I'm looking forward to reading. I am still working my way through those Junji Ito mangas. I bought a ton of them. I want to mention again, the most interesting one I think I found isn't actually Junji Ito's original work. It is just illustrated by him. That's because it is actually retelling a manga version of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And that looks very, very interesting. It looks very, very cool. And I can't wait to check that out and see how his illustrations are going to contribute to the story. Because like I've said before, his illustrations are probably some of the most unique and terrifying things I've ever seen. A couple of years ago, I think they tried to make an anime out of some of his short stories, and it just didn't translate well, because a good portion of what makes his work so frightening is the experience of turning the page and not really knowing what you're looking at for a while, and then like the horror once you realize what you are looking at. So like the manga format, the comic format, is like a very big part of the scare. It's like the page turn, like startled, like feeling you get when you first see that one illustration that it's been building up to.
That's really cool. I hadn't heard of this artist and author, but we did buy I think it's called Go. We bought that for the library because nobody in the system had it, and since it was highly suggested by Amelia, we thought somebody in the system should have it.
That's the first of his works I had ever read. Mm-hmm. It was very, very unnerving.
Yes, so not for our younger readers, probably.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
unless they're really into that kind of scary thing. Some younger kids are, but I will not be suggesting that to younger readers, probably. But well, I hope you enjoy those. How about Mashuda or Fatia? Would like to go next?
Me and Fatia, we both have poems, so I think Fatia would like to go first.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
Yeah, she's just super excited. She wrote that poem.
Penguins, first lesson is ESL. Then comes the second lesson, math. Penguins, third lesson is penguin science. Penguins, fourth lesson is reading. Then penguins, last lesson is art, and more art.
Excellent. I love penguins, especially such smart penguins that know so many languages and math and science and art.
And my penguin is really smart.
Yeah.
It's like Arabic, English, Bengali, so many languages.
Wow.
And more.
Penguin, do they know penguin too?
Yeah.
They know so many languages.
How they know them so quickly? They started knowing them when they were born.
Mm-hmm.
By their parents. And her mom is Mrs. Penguin, and her dad is Mr. Penguin.
Nice. Sounds like a lovely family.
They're actually, her parents are actually both teachers.
Cool. That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that poem. I like when you share your poems.
Welcome.
And Mashuda, is your poem that you wanted to share one you wrote or one that you found?
That I found. So I found the poem is Ode on the Spring by Thomas Gray. Since it's springtime, that poem just gives a vibe to a spring, which is my favorite season. So lo, where the rosy bosom hours, fair Venus train appear. Disclose the long-expecting flowers and awake the purple year. The attic warbler pours her throat, responsive to the cuckoo's note. The untaught harmony of spring, while whispering pleasure as they fly. Cool zephyrs through the clear blue sky, their gathered fragrance fling. Where the oak's thick branches stretch, a broader browner shade, where the road and mass grown beach of our canopies the glade, beside some water's rushy brink, with me the muse shall sit and think, our ease reclined in rustic state, how vain the ardor of the proud, how little are the proud, how indigenous the great, still the toiling hand of care, the painting heart's repose. Yet hark how through the peopled air the buzzy murmur glows, the insect youth are on the wing, eager to taste the honeyed spring, and float amid the liquid noon, some lightly over the current skim, some show their gaily gilded trim, quick glancing to the sun, to contemplation, silver eye, such as the race of men, and that crib and that fly, shall end where they began, alike the busy and the gay, but flutter through life's little day, its in fortune's varying colors dressed, brushed by the hand of rogue mischance, or chilled by age, their airy dance, they live in dust to rest. Methinks I hear in accent low and sportive kind reply, poor moralist, and what art thou, a solitary fly? Thy joys no glittering female meets, for hive past bow of hoarded sweets, no painted plumage to display. One hasty wings thy youth is flown, thy sun is set, thy spring is gone, we frolic while it's May.
That was such a beautiful poem, Mashuda.
Thank you. It was pretty long, but like it just, I don't know. A lot of the words, like, I didn't understand, but I loved how it sounds. So like this poem was like a difficult for me because I only read it 2 times, but like I really have to sometimes, some poems, to actually understand the meaning, I would have to read it like 3 times, depending on like the version. Because like a lot of times I often interpret the poems like in what I'm thinking, and then I go back to see like if my interpretation matches with what the author was trying to say. But the reason why I loved it, because like it just like it just gives me like that, I mean, I'm like experiencing spring, which is like, does that make sense?
And your spring is a favorite season too.
Yeah, that poem really made me feel like I was out in nature on a nice spring day. It definitely like painted a scene.
Yeah, same with me.
I just feel like painting now.
Yeah, you could do some painting. Maybe you can paint something inspired by the poem.
Oh, what should I paint?
Paint a spring scene. Well, anyways, I also have some poems to share. So as we know, April is National Poetry Month. And if you're listening to this on Friday evening, yesterday was Poem in Your Pocket Day, which I know that Georgia at one point in her life memorized a poem called Poem in Your Pocket.
Actually, I had to do it 5 years in a row.
Whoa, 5 years?
I know. I still know it by heart.
Can you say some of it?
I can say all of it. Keep a poem in your pocket and a picture in your head, and you'll never feel lonely at night when you're in bed. The little words will sing to you. The dozen dreams will dance to you at night when you're in bed. So keep a picture in your pocket and a poem in your head, and you'll never feel lonely at night when you're in bed. I think I might have missed a part.
That's still cool that you remember that much of it.
Thank you.
I love the idea of Poem in Your Pocket Day. It's like a little more challenging with COVID, but because you're not probably running into people as much. But the idea is that you would celebrate your love of poetry by finding a short poem that you could keep in your pocket. I guess it could be long, but it would take up a lot more of your pocket space. But you'd keep a poem in your pocket, and then you're supposed to like share it with people throughout the day.
Print it on American Girl doll paper. It could be an American Girl, the world's longest poem on American Girl doll paper. It'd be the size of a small poem.
I don't know what American Girl doll paper is. Is it mini paper?
Do you know American Girl dolls?
Yeah.
It'd be like paper for them. I don't think they've even invented that. Yeah, it'd be like
doll
tiny
size.
Paper.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, and tiny words. So you could print out the longest, world's longest poem on there, and you could just fit it in your pocket and give it to somebody, and that person would need reading, and then that person would need reading glasses because they'd be looking so close at the print. They actually make little American Girl doll books because they're now making American Girl dolls for your American Girl dolls. So it's like if I had a doll of myself via like a Georgia American Girl doll, would that make any sense?
And then your American Girl doll of yourself has an American Girl doll of herself. It could just keep going.
Maybe. That would be so funny. But with the American Girl dolls, for American Girl dolls, all American Girl dolls come with their book. So the little American Girl dolls come with miniature books with actual print text. I once tried to read the entire Meet Kit chapter book. I had to get out my reading glasses, and then my eyes started watering for like 2 minutes. So I had to stop.
Smart idea. Well, the poems that I wanted to share today are short enough that they could probably be put onto American Girl doll paper. Probably not American Girl doll, American Girl doll paper, but just one level of American Girl doll. So I'll read a handful of these. We also shared these on our social media on Poem in Your Pocket Day, so you can also check them out there if you have social media accounts. Okay, so the first one is by Emily Dickinson. It's called To Make a Prairie. To make a prairie, it takes a clover and one bee, one clover and a bee, and reverie. The reverie alone will do if bees are few. And that is the whole poem. That's probably one of the shortest ones in here. The next one is In the High Country by David St. John. Some days I am happy to be no one. The shifting grasses in the May winds are miraculous enough as they ripple through the meadow of lupine. The field is iridescent as a Renaissance heaven. And do you see that boy with his arms raised like one of Raphael's angels held within this hush and this pause and the sky's lapis expanse? That boy is my son, and I am his only father, even when I am no one. And then I've got Tanka One by Sadakichi Hartman. Winter, spring, who knows? White buds from the plum trees wing and mingle with the snows. No blue skies these flowers bring, yet their fragrance augurs spring. And another.
I love that poem.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. I like picturing, because we just have been experiencing some of these spring blooms where they sort of fall down from the trees like little petals. Well, they are petals, but little like snowflakes, they seem like.
Yeah, I love that.
So nice. This one's very short too. This one is called Fog by Carl Sandburg. The fog comes on little cat feet. It sits looking over harbor and city on silent haunches and then moves on. And let's see. This one is Risk by Anais Nin. And then the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, I do like that. It's very short but sweet.
Mm-hmm. Here's one from Lucille Clifton called My Mama Moved Among the Days. My mama moved among the days like a dream walker in a field. Seemed like what she touched was hers. Seemed like what touched her couldn't hold. She got us almost through the high grass, then seemed like she turned around and ran right back in, right back on in. And this is one of my favorite poems of all time in terms of short poems. It's called The Red Wheelbarrow by William Carlos Williams. So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens. And I'll do one more. This is Invisible Fish by Joy Harjo, who is the U.S. Poet Laureate. Invisible fish swim this ghost ocean, now described by waves of sand, by water-worn rock. Soon the fish will learn to walk. Then humans will come ashore and paint dreams on the dying stone. Then later, much later, the ocean floor will be punctuated by Chevy trucks carrying the dreamers' descendants who are going to the store. Those are all some short poems that are very pocket worthy, in my opinion. And if it was a normal time, I would be sharing the wealth with people, spreading the poems. But I guess we'll just share them online and on the radio for now.
That's pretty cool. I love that poem.
Which one?
Every one of them.
Me too. I like
you have such great taste.
I like the spring one. I love the spring one, which is my sister's one. The best. So I love spring. Springs we hate, springs we love, and
springish things.
Springish things.
I love it. Funny.
Flowers we love.
Flowers we hate. Flowers we
flowers
love.
We love. Bugs we hate.
Ew, blue
bugs. Things. Wait. I have a new one. Okay. Flowers and weather we love. Mosquitoes we hate. Springish things.
Have you had mosquitoes yet?
Not really. No.
I hate mosquitoes, but ticks are the worst.
Yeah, and they're hard to get off. So if you want to check out some poems, you can go to poets.org, which is a website for the Academy of American Poets. And it's a fun way to find some poems. You can look things up by theme, by poet, by title of a specific poem. They also have a way that you can subscribe to get a poem a day in your inbox. So if you really want to like commit to like accessing some new poems, you can subscribe to that and get one mailed to you every day. But yeah, it's a really nice way to find some new poems. They also are on social media, so you can also connect that way and see some posts every day with poems. But definitely suggest people checking out some poetry, even though by the time this radio show airs, it will no longer be National Poetry Month. But like Earth Day is every day, National Poetry Month can be every month. But on that note, I think it's time for us to say goodbye for the day. We hope everyone has a great week with lots of quality reading time.
Bye.
We'll be back next week to talk about
keep reading
some more
books.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gone. Instead of me, always seems to know the way. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gone.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Kenneth Pierce, age 52. Richard Brewer, age 19. Tiara Bush, age 30. Abdul Hadi Zamani.
At Academy Park in Albany Wednesday, the bell sounded 22 times for 22 workers who lost their lives last year in the Capital District. That number does not include the workers who died from COVID this past year, many of them essential workers who were not properly protected by employers.
Joel Glick, age 49. Robert David Hoffe, age 72.
Seth Cohen shared a poem.
I am your mother, father, sister, brother, child, partner, lover, friend, co-worker. I plan to go to work, to deliver my goods, repair a dump truck, work in the flour mill, farm the land, test my invention, cut the pipe, fight a structure fire, drive the sanitation truck, guide the traffic in construction zone, transport people, save lives, teach. I didn't plan to die today, but I did.
Tanya Basil, a nurse at Albany Med, responded.
That poem just blew me away because it made me realize how connected all of us laborers are. It's just, we're family. And another thing we have in common is businesses or owners or institutions that don't place that kind of value on us, they lose track of the fact that we are family. We are all united. I've been a nurse for 24 years, and over the years I have cared for injured and the sick that come in that are laborers of one sort or another. And again, I took it for granted. That their jobs can be hazardous on a daily basis.
Mark Emanation from the Capital District Area Labor Federation and one of the organizers of the event spoke about his personal experience as a garment worker.
I went to go and apply at a union, Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Worker, organized factory. So I went and applied at that factory. Knocked on the door, walked in, beautiful place. People working, they took me to the office, I filled out an application. Then they said, there's a bunch of other garment factories in this 17-story building, I might as well go apply at another one. So I go up the stairs, I knock on the door, they open a little thing. I say what I'm there for, they close the little thing, and they unpadlock the door, and I open it up. And on a napkin, they wrote my name and phone number down around the job. And as they were getting the napkin and the pen, I looked around at all the people that were there. It was filled with women from Korea, with their children next to them, babies, by their sides while they were sewing. I looked around and the restrooms were padlocked. The place was padlocked, the restrooms were padlocked. Not that I didn't know this beforehand, but that was the difference between union jobs and non-union jobs. The PRO Act, which will give us the right to organize. We have a president, finally, who will sign it. We have the House of Representatives who've passed it. We have 47 senators, including the two in New York State, who are sponsoring it. We need three more. We estimate 60 million Americans want to join unions, but are prevented by these terrible laws that have been passed for the last 40, 50 years. I do not want to come back here next year. I don't want to go to another Workers' Memorial Day. The best defense working people have on the job to demand safety and health is unions.
Right.
Unions. That's what we need.
Ron Briggs of the union CSEA Region 4 spoke about workers that were injured just the day before the rally.
For the years I have been involved as a union activist, I've always appreciated the saying, mourn for the dead and fight like hell for the living. So while today we are here to mourn for those who have passed, I was asked to take about 2 minutes to talk about fighting like hell for those that are living. I represent CSEA members, and for those of you who know, members yesterday on the Northway were hit, struck by a car in a work zone, right? They actually were taking down the barriers to stop cars from merging over when the gentleman was struck. There is no way this can continue without some penalty and awareness for people. So while the gentleman, it was in critical condition overnight, he has been upgraded to serious, but he is going to be lifelong injured. And what we need to do, and what I'm asking you all to do, is take a moment. This Senate bill is 4682A, and Kennedy is the sponsor, and Assembly Bill 485. And this legislation would establish a work zone speed cameras program. How many members, how many friends, how many fathers, how many sisters, how many mothers have to be injured or killed before we take it upon ourselves to fight like hell so that people will remember that we cannot go through a work zone speeding, minding our telephone, minding our radio, whatever you are minding, instead of paying attention to those men and women standing there risking their life.
We heard readings from an upcoming book of poems by essential workers during the pandemic called Coronavirus Haiku.
9 hours empty, a 12-hour taxi shift, spent 6 with Bassie. Pickles and french fries, 2 bees buzzing, it's a fight. Printmaking begins. First time I saw a homeless man smile at me in a while. Black blood on white sheet, bird season, black birds only, mother hen grief tweets. Time for coffee break. Cabbie double parks by store. A cop tickets him. Dismal season, then. I am reminded seeds sprout from cracks in concrete.
Mark Emanation shared some additional thoughts about workers during the pandemic.
It's like essential workers that we have nice little commercials. Oh, you're so essential. And then we couldn't give them masks. We couldn't protect them. So they were expendable workers. Another word for essential was expendable. I'm a member of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. We've lost over 1,000 members nationwide. Meat packers, poultry workers, grocery store workers who've died of COVID. And you go like, what? You know? And those were, you know, someone said up here, it's like, you know, you go to work, you expect to like work safe, come home. You don't expect to die because somebody wouldn't buy you a mask. The nurses at Albany Med. Mike's a nurse at Albany Med here.
Hi.
They're doing over their mask. They got to clean their own masks during COVID and reuse them for like a week. They didn't have
20. They told us the mask is good for 20 uses.
And they should have like immediately tested every single person.
A recurring theme from speakers at the event was the push for passage of the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, or the PRO Act. The PRO Act is a bill in Congress right now that the president has promised to sign if passed that would make it easier for unions to organize and grow. Mark Emanation explained just one of the ways that companies in the U.S. make it harder for unions to organize.
We were living in, let's say, Australia. You had 100 people working in a factory, and you got 51 people to sign a union card, there's a union. Here, there's an election that they can drag out for 3 years, intimidate everybody, have attrition and firings and all things, and then have the election. So we need that PRO Act.
Kara Garbarino, another organizer, closed the gathering.
We must fight back. We simply cannot and will not let politicians and corporations put workers in danger, drive down wages, and destroy our communities. We must pass the PRO Act. We must pass the Protecting America's Workers Act to provide OSHA protection to the millions of workers without it. Stronger criminal and civil penalties for companies that seriously violate job safety laws and approved anti-retaliation protections. We must ensure that all workers have the necessary protections against COVID-19 at work. Our hardworking brothers and sisters dedicate themselves to their job each and every day and deserve to return home safely to their loved ones at night. So today I stand here with you all to pledge to fight for safe jobs, economic security, opportunity, and a better life for all.
I hope that you will all pledge with me, because workplace safety should be a right for every worker. Thank you.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Hi, this is Karen Schomer, formerly of The Schomer Show. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Art Omai in Kent, New York. Open daily from dawn until dusk. Art Omai Sculpture and Architecture Park presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Now accepting advance registrations for visits on weekends and select holidays. Information at artomai.org.
This is WGXC's Congressional Report, tracking the votes, words, and actions of Representative Antonio Delgado, a Democrat from Rhinebeck, representing the 19th Congressional District, and Paul Tonko, a Democrat from Amsterdam, from the 20th Congressional District. The website 538.com reports that Delgado, Tonko, and Sean Maloney, all Hudson Valley Democrats, vote with President Joe Biden's positions 100% of the time so far, while Republican Elise Stefanik votes with Biden just 18.8% of the time.
Emily Munson is reporting for the Times Union. New York will lose a seat in Congress and an electoral college vote based on new data released by the U.S. Census Bureau April 26. U.S. Census officials said if New York counted 89 more people and the population data for all other states remained the same, the state would not be losing a seat. Dan Lamb, lecturer at Cornell's Institute for Public Affairs, said, and I quote, "It's like voting. Every person counts," end quote. He added, and I quote, "Anytime there is a near miss like that, you start to wonder what could have been," end quote. Seven states, including New York, California, Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, will each lose one seat in Congress. Six states will gain seats. Texas will add two seats, while Colorado, Florida, Missouri, North Carolina, and Oregon will each gain a seat. Plus, states that are gaining congressional seats will also gain electoral college votes in presidential elections. It will now be up to the state's 10-member redistricting commission to decide which congressional seat New York will lose and how to redraw the map. The Census Bureau promised to deliver the full data set used for redrawing the maps to the state by the end of September. That information will pinpoint where population declines took place. It also means the final district maps that will be used for 2022 elections may not be available until the end of the year. According to the data released, New York's population grew by 4.2% from 2010 to 2020, and more people moved out of the state than moved in, census officials.